Harry Houdini died on Halloween 1926. 10 years later, people got together to try to find him via seance. They did the best they could.
Houdini, are you here? Are you here, Houdini? Please manifest yourself in any way possible. Take from this earnest gathering any strength that may be necessary for you to use. Take any vital thing from us that you may need to enable you to carry out your promise of years ago. We have waited, Houdini, oh so long. Never have you been able to present the evidence you promised. And now, this is a night of night. The world is listening. Harry, your world, your audience. And Bessie is here. Your Bessie, who is part of you for 33 years. She's here, Harry, pleading in her heart for a prearranged sign from you. It means so much to her, to all of us, to the world. Harry, we are all seekers after truth. Please manifest yourself by speaking through the trumpet. Lift it. Lift it. Speak through it. Speak. Speak, Harry. We are watching and waiting, Harry. Levitate the table. Move it. Lift the table. Move it. Rap on it. Spell out a code, Harry. Please.
I'm not sure Harry moved that table, but they've been trying ever since to find him. In a moment, Elaine Kosmiskis joins us. Her new work, The Medium Who Baffled Houdini. It's an amazing story, and we'll also talk about clairvoyance on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we've all had those times when we need a little extra money, right? And here's an easy way you can do it. Drive with Uber. Uber is that smartphone app, and what it does is it connects riders with drivers. I've used it. I've used it a lot. As a matter of fact, in Cincinnati, it was my lifeline to get around. They were quick and efficient. Those drivers know what they're doing. And it's flexible if you're a driver. You don't have to quit your job day or night. You work around your schedule. Simple as that. First, you go to drivewithuber.com to sign up. It's free to do that. You can do it on your phone, too. Answer a few basic questions about yourself, about your car, and then once approved, you simply start driving. That's all there is to it. So start enjoying the flexibility of working when you want, earning extra money on your schedule by signing up to Drive with Uber. Go to drivewithuber.com, drivewithuber.com, U-B-E-R, drivewithuber.com. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We're going to have a couple great hours here for you. Elaine Kosmiskis is the director of the New England School of Metaphysics. Also a nationally known spiritual medium and author. She's got lots of books out there. We'll talk about some of them. Elaine has been certified by the National Association of Spiritualist Churches as a medium. Now, during this career, she has conducted many well-known publicized seances, including the 1997 official Houdini seance at the Godspeed Opera House in Connecticut. Now, the one I just played was back in 1936. He also did a seance for the cast of the play Blith Spirit at the Long Wharf Theater in New Haven, Connecticut. Welcome to Coast, Elaine Kosmiskis. Elaine, how'd I do on your last name?
Oh, you did pretty good. It's phonetic. It's Elaine Kosmiskis. It's a Lithuanian name. My husband's Lithuanian.
Oh, one of my dear friends was Rich Kasunis, who is Lithuanian back in Detroit.
Yeah, they're happy people.
He went on to be a prosecuting attorney.
Good for him. My daughter's an attorney. They're hard workers. I know that.
They sure are. Hey, tell me a little bit more about yourself as a medium.
Well, I was born with the gift of clairvoyance, and in my crib, I saw my Hindu guide. And as a child, I just thought everyone was psychic, George. In fact, I was quite surprised when I was about 8 to find out other people were not seeing what I was seeing. So, of course, I became very quiet about it. But when I was in college, the gift went underground a little bit during puberty. But when I was in college, I started seeing my guides again. But by now, I was a little more mature. And I was reading books about Edgar Casey.
Oh, I love that guy.
I love Casey. And for the first time, I felt confident. I felt somebody else saw auras. They talked to spirits. And I thought, well, maybe I'm not crazy after all. Because I thought it was something wrong with me. And I just kind of kept it to myself. And then I began to go to the spiritualist church. I studied for 3 years at a spiritualist developmental circle. In the spiritualist tradition, we believe that people should be developed. I call it like a coach. So we have developmental circles led by veteran mediums who are clairvoyant, clairaudient. And I had a wonderful teacher, Reverend Gladys Custance and Reverend Kenneth Custance, who worked with me. And after 3 years, I was tested by a group of mediums to prove my mediumship. And I passed the exam. I've been doing mediumship ever since. I find that once I started, I couldn't stop. You know, it's kind of like eating popcorn or candy. You like it so much, you keep going.
And toss peanuts in there, too.
Oh, I love peanuts. Well, you know, I thought first, you know, I'll just go into it and I'll do it as a volunteer. I'll just volunteer in the churches because I was an English teacher. And, you know, help them out a little bit. And the next thing you know, people wanted private readings. So I started doing private readings. And pretty soon I was teaching part-time and doing the mediumship full-time. But I've enjoyed it because I like helping people. I think that one of the greatest fears people have, and Sigmund Freud said this, is the fear of death. And to me, a good medium, a well-trained medium, can help the average person understand the first tenet of spiritualism, which is there is no death. And there are no dead. I think that's a very important tenet to work on and to prove for others.
How did you move into being an author as being a medium? How did you make that transition?
Well, it's kind of interesting. I'm also an astrologer. So my astrology students used to take so many notes, I hardly saw their faces. So I decided to write a book on astrology. I wrote a 500-page book, which was fine. And then I also got the writing bug. I thought, I'll write one book. That's why it had so many pages. It's soul cycles. Because I'll never write another book again. This is just too much work. But I guess Spirit had a little task for me. Because once I got started writing, I started, like the mediumship, I started to like it. And the next book I wrote had to do with, I was asked to write a book on ghosts by Schiffer Publisher. And at first, I kind of hesitated because I'm not really a ghost hunter per se, but I had put together about 300 pages on parapsychology for my parapsychology students. So I said, would you mind if I put a third of it parapsychology and two-thirds on Connecticut ghosts? And they said, that's fine. So I thought, well, I might as well give it a try. And I'm glad I did, George, because it made me do something totally different. It got me into physical mediumship.
Uh-huh.
For many years, I was primarily a mental mediumship using clairvoyance because it was so easy.
Well, I was going to say, what's the difference between mental and physical clairvoyancy?
That's a very good question. Mental mediumship is when you communicate with the other side mind to mind, such as clairsentience. I think everyone has a little bit of clairsentience. An example of that would be the phone rings on a Sunday evening, and you just know it's Aunt Rose who never calls at that time.
That's right.
That's clairsentience.
You can feel it.
And I think that's a very common gift for many people. Then there's clairaudience, which Arthur Ford had, and that is where you hear the voice of spirit. And then there is clairvoyance, where you actually see the spirits. And that, to me, is very helpful because you can get a lot of details from clairvoyance. Then we also have something called clairgustience, where you can smell or taste spirit. And like, say, Grandma always wore lavender perfume. So when you smell lavender, it reminds you of Grandma.
Or maybe it is Grandma.
Oh, yes. Could be.
Yeah.
If you're a believer, it could be. And then physical mediumship is really how spiritualism began with the Fox sisters, with table tipping and raps, which is coming back, by the way. And they're also new forms of physical mediumship, such as what we call psychic photography, electronic voice photography, electronic voice phenomena. And the old-time mediums who didn't have that electronic equipment used to simply put two slates together and a little tiny piece of chalk and do slate writing. So those are some examples of the physical mediumship. In between the two, we have trance. Some people call trance mediumship physical. Some people call it mental. But we have all kinds of mediumship and many ways to access the other side.
And it's all tied into energy, Elaine, isn't it?
Absolutely. Everything vibrates. Our physicists tell us that. And there's a different vibration between the dense physical world and the higher vibration of the spirit world. And that's why the average person doesn't see, taste, touch, or hear spirit, because it's on a very high vibration. And that's also why spirits can walk into our room through the walls. I've seen that many times, and it's not scary at all, because I realize they're on a high vibration. They can just enter very quickly. And many times people, when they first see spirit, they get afraid and they shut down, which is sad, because most of the spirits, not all, but most spirits are helpful spirits of our loved ones or spirit guides that are really trying to assist us.
That is truly remarkable what you've been doing. Then you made a transition into writing about what you do best.
Yes, and I love to write because it's an extension of teaching. I taught parapsychology for many years at the community colleges, and I just love teaching students because if you teach one person, you may be helping 100 because they'll help other
people.
Sure.
What did the students want to learn?
Oh, they like my students, a lot of the young ones, they like the physical mediumship. They like the table tipping, the psychic photography, the EVP. They like the phenomena. My more mature students simply like to get in touch with grandma or their spirit guides. And I think that's a wonderful thing, too.
Now, what did you think of that little Houdini clip from 1936?
Well, it reminded me of the really first Houdini seance was done by Reverend Arthur Ford in 1928.
And two years after Houdini died.
People don't realize all the details in Arthur Ford's book, Known But Unknown. He tells about the first Houdini seance. And really, Arthur Ford was a true spiritualist medium. He came through, he was a minister and a medium, and he was a great clairaudient. And he heard his guide tell him that Houdini wanted to get in touch with his wife, Beth. And of course, you know, like all of us, we're very shy about approaching famous people because we don't want to look like we're publicity mongers. So he said, no, I'm not going to approach her, even though they both lived in Manhattan at the time. But one of his congregation actually knew Beth Houdini and asked her if she would like a seance, and she said yes. And the first seance, if you look at the Houdini movies, you can see Arthur Ford, Beth Houdini, there's reporters there. And he brought through some very evidential messages. The work of a spiritualist medium is to bring through evidence. We keep saying that to the students. Evidence is the most important thing. And Reverend Arthur Ford started to talk to Beth, and he said, you know, your husband wants to know if you've learned any French. Now, that was very evidential because it was a joke between the couple.
An inside joke.
People didn't know about it. And they used to play Paris, and Beth was his assistant. And he was always on her case about learning more French than now the show will begin. He said, learn some French, and she just really didn't want to. So that was an inside joke. And he also gave some more inside information. And then he started to sing the words to Sweet Rosalie, which is a very popular song, Sweet Rosalie of the I Love. And it was also an inside trick that the Houdinis had. Because Harry Houdini, I mean, he was a big skeptic, probably the biggest skeptic at all. But I believe he was psychic. He had psychic abilities. And his friend, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, also believed that. But in his early career, he loved to pretend to be a medium. And he would get dressed up with his turban and his costume, and he would be this great medium. And his assistant would be his wife. Now, they would go into the audience, and Beth would say to the person, give me something, and let's see if Houdini can, Houdini can tell what it is. Well, of course, people are going to get things like rings, keys, a bracelet.
Wallets.
Put in their hand, right?
Yeah.
So they had a code where each letter of the song represented a different letter of the alphabet. Say, we'll say Sweet was B, and maybe Rosalie might be E. So she might start singing the song with B or E and or K or something, and he'd say, oh, K, it's a key. And we just guessed.
Ah, ha, ha.
And that's a very simple trick.
I like
very
that.
Very simple.
The amazing Kreskin would go into the crowd and try to find out where his fee, the money he was getting from his event, who was holding it. And he always told people, if I don't guess it, the proprietor, the theater people, can keep the fee.
Isn't that great?
And apparently he found the fee quite a bit. Now, people thought maybe he had a little kind of earpiece in his ear, and his assistant was in the crowd and knew exactly where it was and would go, warmer, warmer, you know, cold, cold. And
it could be. But I have not seen Kreskin myself, but some of my students have. I think he's genuine.
So how do you do that? How do you actually sense, for example, who's got your money without trickery?
I think he must have some very powerful spirit guides, although he doesn't say he's a psychic in any direction.
What would you say, Elaine, your strength is? Clairvoyancy, the mediumship, what?
I would say clairvoyance first, a mediumship second. And then I would say I also have a very strong ability to do transmediumship.
Does it get stronger and stronger, or are you at your point now where you've learned as much as you're going to learn?
Oh, no, I'm a perpetual student, George. I love to learn. When there's a new medium in town, where I've been to Arthur Findlay College to study trance. I've been out to Camp Chesterfield to study physical mediumship. I love to learn. I think it gets stronger and stronger.
Now, you said at the outset that you realized at a young age that you had this gift and other people didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it that their gift isn't developed? They've got it in their system. They just can't use it.
It could be, but when you're seeing people that other people aren't seeing, that can be very unsettling for a young child.
Oh, sure.
It can't be. I was fortunate.
It's like that movie.
My grandmother had a gift of clairvoyance, so that was a big help.
It was inherited.
Encouraging, yeah. She knew. She knew a lot of things, and people would speak about the psychic and reincarnation in our household in a casual way, so I knew it wasn't a terrible thing. But, of course, in the outer world, people don't understand.
I would guess that if you believe in reincarnation and you look at where you are right now on the pecking order, you're pretty high up there, aren't you?
Well, I think it takes about 5 incarnations to be a great medium. You don't get it in one.
You don't. No. You have to start on the bottom and work your way up.
You do.
And how many more times do you have to come back before you're at that perfection level?
Well, I think, like Krishnamurti, we have to come back until we do the right thing at the right time in the right way, which is a challenge for all of us.
So maybe a few more for you?
Probably.
See, I've always thought that the mere fact that all of us who even start talking about this, whether it's in an interview format or conversation pieces with friends, you're at a higher level than most people.
I truly believe that people that devote their lives to spiritual pursuits, whether it's mediumship or creative things, they're probably within 3 lifetimes of not having to come back, because you're pretty high up there. And that includes people that give themselves in public service.
Sure. Do you use this gift in everyday life?
Yes, I do. I have fun with it.
What are some of the things you do?
Well, when I'm talking to my children, I love to tune into them before they call.
Maybe you make them call through your powers.
Oh no, I have 4 children. They're all pretty good. They're adults. They call me on a regular basis.
Yeah, they know
on their own free will. But my husband and I, we try to find lost articles. We have fun with it too. But generally speaking, I try to work a lot with my guides, and I love it when I talk to them in my sleep, because I feel dreams are a very safe way for the average person to connect with the other side. And they often give me whole lectures or messages in the dreams, and I write them down, and I study with my guides in the sleep state. So I enjoy that. That would be my personal use of the psychic.
All right, Elaine, I want to talk about 2 of your books, the new one, The Medium Who Baffled Houdini, and also your other book, The Art of Mediumship, when we come back. The Medium Who Baffled Houdini, it's just out now, isn't it?
It just came out, and it's a great read. It's a fun read, because it's all about Marjorie Crandon, who was the greatest physical medium of the 20th century. I call her the last of the great physical.
And Houdini called her a fraud, did he not?
Well, he called all mediums fraud.
Yeah, well, that's true. We're going to come back. We'll talk about this, The Medium Who Baffled Houdini, and also The Art of Mediumship in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We are with Elaine Kosmaskis. How was that one, Elaine? Better?
Very good.
Thank you. Thank you. I've studied it. Studied Lithuanian.
Well, it's good to be on tonight. It really is.
Yeah, well, it is, too. It's fun to be with you. I want to talk with you first about your latest book, The Medium Who Baffled Houdini, and then we'll get into The Art of Mediumship. Now, this is about a woman named Marjorie Crandon. Tell us about her.
Well, Marjorie Crandon was the wife of a very prominent Boston surgeon, Dr. Leroy Crandon, and she was a natural medium. Dr. Crandon loved to read on parapsychology in the 1920s, and he read the Dr. Crawford's book on physical mediumship. And he became very interested in physical phenomena, so he decided to have a seance. And he had a table made by a carpenter with no nails, exactly as Dr. Crawford specified for table tipping. And he and his wife, Marjorie, and two other couples got together in their Lime Street home in Boston, back in Beacon Hill, and they decided to have a seance. Now, Dr. Crandon was very scientific. And the interesting thing is, which doesn't happen often, is when they all sat around the table, Marjorie started giggling, and then she got serious, and it wasn't long before the table was really tipping and moving. So Dr. Crandon suggested one by one a person leave. So we'll say Dr. Crandon got up, left the room, and the other five were there. Well, the table kept moving. The last person, he took his seat again to get up in the experiment, was his wife, Marjorie. When Marjorie left the room, the table stopped moving. And that's how he knew his wife was a medium. And he was very excited because Dr. Crandon was the one that was interested in mediumship, not Marjorie. She was more like a socialite. She liked horseback riding, going out to society luncheon. She wasn't interested in being a medium per se, but her husband was very interested in having her develop. And it wasn't long before she very quickly went from table tipping and developed that to the point where the table got up on two legs and actually started to walk out of the room. It was very interesting. She was quite unique. That Dr. Crandon demanded that his wife go into trance. Can you imagine your spouse saying you should go into trance? And, of course, Marjorie protested. She says, no way. I don't want to miss the fun. If I go into trance, I won't remember anything. And he said, little sister will do as big brother says. This was back in the days before women's lib. So she started taking deep breaths. And again, she was a natural trance medium. She went into a trance state. And her brother, who had died about 12 years before, Walter Stinson, came through and started talking through her. So she was a deep trance medium. And it wasn't long before she went to the next phase, which is physical phenomena.
Now, in those days, was she getting exposure in any kind of media that might have been around at the time?
Absolutely not. In fact, she did not want any exposure. Her husband was a prominent Harvard professor and physician. They did not want their name known. She started, her name is Minna Crandon, but she used the name Marjorie the Medium because it wasn't long before people became interested in her mediumship. And Dr. Bird wrote a book about her called Marjorie the Medium, which actually deeded with transcripts of the seances. And they would not give her name at all. She did not want any publicity whatsoever.
How good would you say she was?
She was excellent. She was I think she was the last of the great physical mediums. I really do.
And why did Houdini call her a fraud? Even though, as you said earlier, he called everybody a fraud.
He actually was very disappointed in mediums. You have to remember, after World War I, mediumship really exploded because so many people lost their loved ones in World War I, and they wanted to communicate. The demand was so great that there were a tremendous number of fake mediums, especially physical mediumship, George, is the hardest to develop and the easiest to fake. There's no question about it. And there were many people faking physical mediumship. And so what happened was Houdini investigated, and he was appalled at what was going on. They actually had catalogs for people who wanted to be fake mediums.
Huh.
Where you could get, you know, all kinds of things, and he was very disgusted.
Did he try to destroy them once he realized they were fakes?
Yes, he did. And he exposed many fake mediums, which I think is probably a good thing, not a bad thing.
Could you get arrested in those days for this?
Absolutely.
You could. Okay.
Yeah, it's
fraud.
It's defrauding the public.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's true.
Unfortunately, he grouped all mediums as fakes, and there were even genuine mediums such as Marjorie. And he constantly was skeptical of what she did. In fact, she became better known because of Scientific America wanting to investigate her mediumship. And they had a contest in 1925 where they wanted to find out if there was such a thing as life after death. So Marjorie was chosen as the medium they would test. And at the time, they had very stringent rules about testing the medium. And several people were on the Scientific American Committee, including Harvard professor William McDougall. We also had Walter Franklin Prince, American psychical researcher, Dr. Daniel Frost Comstock, who introduced Technicolor to film from MIT, and Harold Carrington, a psychical researcher from England.
I read his book called Journeys of the Astral Body.
Oh, that's a great book.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah, it is. I like all his books, including this book on physical mediumship. He has one, too.
He was very good.
He's excellent, and he knows his stuff because he's both a magician and a psychical researcher, so he can spot the fakes. I think his research is excellent. And so he was on the committee, and Harry Houdini got wind of it, and he kind of muscled his way in. He called Mr. Mum, the head of Scientific America, and asked to be on. Of course, they were honored to have Houdini on the committee. So he got right on. And he went, and he immediately was skeptical. And if you know anything about mediumship, George, have you ever been to a seance?
I've been to one, and it was weird. Very weird.
It's certainly different. But seances require the sensitivity of the medium, but also the participation of the sitters, because nothing is more deadly to a seance than doubt. And if you've got a group of people sitting to contact spirit and you've got one person who's very negative, it'll pull the whole energy down.
They also, at this seance, Elaine talked about the ectoplasm and how dangerous it could be to the medium if something went wrong.
Absolutely, because as I said, physical mediumship is the most difficult to do. And what happened was she became very, very upset the day of the seance. Are you still there, George?
I am.
Okay, and what happened
You did beat me there.
She was throwing up. And I think that these allegations that she tried to vamp Houdini are totally bosh, because she was afraid of him. She was totally sick. She was nervous. She was not at her best, but she still did the seance. And the first seance, she went to trance, and her guide, Walter, came through. And Houdini saw the trumpet start to levitate, and Walter said, "Where would you like it?" And Houdini said, "Over here." And the trumpet went right to Houdini and did a nosedive to the ground, which I think showed that what Walter thought about Houdini. And then they had other seances where Walter would come through and talk to Houdini and exposed a lot of things. For example, he said to Houdini, "Why are you trying to trick the medium?" during one of the experiments, and they stopped the seance, and they found that somebody had put an eraser in the bell box. One of the things that she did was psychokinesis, where she made matter move. And when she was in trance, the spirit guide would actually depress the lever of a bell box so it would ring. Of course, if somebody puts an eraser in it, it's going to take four times the force to ring it.
It sure would.
And so I'd say, who put it there? And, of course, her guide, Walter, accused Houdini of trying to sabotage the seance.
Now, when in the title of the book, the mm-hmm. medium who baffled Houdini.
Yes.
How did she baffle him? Because she was so good at what she did?
I don't think he ever completely understood what she was doing. He really didn't. And I think he got to the point where he was desperate, because one of the last seances he had with Marjorie, when she was in the cabinet, which he had made as a fraud-proof cabinet, her guide, Walter, came through and started yelling at Houdini and cursing. And Walter could curse quite a lot. And he said, he accused Houdini of planting a ruler under her cushion. And so, of course, they had to stop the seance and examine the cabinet, and there was a folding ruler. And Houdini swore on his sainted mother's head that he didn't do it, but he was willing to forgive the Crandons for doing so. And it later came out his assistant, a man by the name of Mr. Collins, admitted to planting it there. But this came out in 1957, well after both Houdini and Marjorie Crandon were dead. So I think it does show he had no way of proving that she was wrong, so he tried to discredit her by any means possible. And Walter even said, he said Houdini would not live that much longer, and he died within 2 years. Walter knew, yeah. So I think there was a lot of things that we got, two different cultures coming together. We have the skeptic and the medium. And no matter what happened, the skeptic, Houdini, became more skeptical, and the medium tried harder and harder to prove the phenomenon. And Marjorie not only worked with Harry Houdini in the Scientific America Committee, she also was tested twice by Harvard University scientists. And the American Society for Psychical Research devoted 500 pages to researching Marjorie Crandon in two volumes. So they must have been pretty impressed with her to go through so much research. And they would devise all kinds of tests. Even the scientists were always trying to test her. And of course, when she was in trance, they would put her in like a glass telephone booth so they could see if she was faking anything. And then they had a device called the voice out machine, where they put a tube in her mouth, and she had to keep blowing on this tube to show that she wasn't a ventriloquist. And yet Walter came through. They devised tests where they would have a luminous donut. They called it a donut, but it was really a luminous ring where you could see it move throughout the room, and they would show how it would move. One of my favorite tests that they had seances like twice a week in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
They would take children's blocks, you know, ABC blocks that children play with. And during the seance, it would be totally dark, and all these blocks would be in the middle of the room. And this was a story that was told by Professor Ralph Harlow, who taught at Smith College. He went, and during the seance, the blocks were moved, and they spelled a woman's name. And it was very evidential, because his sister had just died a few months before. And when the lights came out, the blocks were arranged to spell A-N-N. A, the name of his sister. So I don't know how you fake something like that. I think her real, she did so many wonderful things. Her real gift was psychokinesis, moving things around. She also, her final great test was they decided to try to interlock two wooden circles of different, made of different types of wood. And Fate Magazine did a wonderful article on this, because they had people who had been in the seance who described exactly what happened. Dr. Richardson's daughter, who was a researcher, wrote the article. And she describes how they had the two different circles made of wood. They're about 8 inches apart. And they put them in on a table. And during the seance, when Marjorie was in trance, Walter actually was able to interlock the two rings, which is an incredible feat, because you have to actually dematerialize part of the wood and then rematerialize it to lock it. It's very, very difficult. Well, of course, the Crandons were just thrilled that this occurred, and they were great friends of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. So they packed the rings up, and they sent them to England to show him how wonderful her mediumship was. Alas, they broke in transit, but I think that was a great experiment, and it took a lot of ingenuity to come up with it. The thing about Marjorie Crandon is she was game for everything. She's a very upbeat person, and if scientists wanted to try something new, she always said, sure, okay.
How did she fade away, Elaine, eventually?
Unfortunately, many mediums are under a great deal of stress. And sometimes, like the Fox sisters, they turn to alcoholism. And in her later years, she unfortunately turned to alcohol and had a even though she came seances, her powers were not the same. She never really achieved the higher powers that she did in the 1920s. But she was still very well liked. When she finally died, she died a couple years after her husband, Dr. Crandon. So her last years were not the most attractive, but her heyday, when she was really cooking, she was quite the medium.
Now let's talk a little bit about your work, The Art of Mediumship. We'll get into it next hour, too, and some phone calls here.
Oh, I love phone calls.
They will ask you all kinds of questions.
I enjoy it. I hope people will call in, and I'm game for anything tonight.
Okay. Now, can you train someone to be a medium?
Yes, but it is like being an artist. We all have some artistic ability, George, but not everyone's going to be a Picasso. You can train, you can improve your psychic abilities. Certainly everybody can be trained in telepathy and intuition. Those are fairly easy skills. But when you get into like mediumship, it's a little more difficult. Trance, I don't recommend to people unless they've been in my school for 2 years, because it has some contraindications. And physical mediumship, as I said in the beginning, is very rare, but it's certainly worth working toward.
Yeah, it sure is.
And we start with table tipping and build our way up to psychic photography and spirit casting.
Have you ever been scared?
Yeah.
Doing this?
I think that's a very good question. Yes, I have been. When I'm around negative people or negative influences, I get the heebie-jeebies just like everyone else, and I know that's not for me.
No, you got to be careful, don't you?
You do. Yeah.
Could you get hurt doing this? You?
I've never been physically hurt, but I have been drained by people.
Psychic vampires.
Yeah, so you have to. I've been drained to the point where I've had to go to bed for a couple of days, but that's rare.
They could do it to you.
They can. So you have to. Yeah, that's why I don't recommend people studying mediumship on their own. Get a good medium to train under. The National Association of Spiritualist Churches lists the people they've trained. There are a lot of wonderful organizations now. Work with somebody that's knowledgeable. It's the best thing to do.
Absolutely. Okay, Elaine, stay with us. But how do people contact you if they want more information?
The best thing is my website, which is www.theartofmediumship.com. Or they certainly can call my office, which is 860-668-0373. And remember, I'm on Eastern Standard Time, 9 to 5.
Okay, very good. Well, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM, and we're going to take some phone calls with you, of course, as we continue talking about clairvoyance and the art of mediumship. I think it is so important to be able to handle the other side with some class, and you do that. We'll be back.